Welcome to the Fair But Firm Boxing Talk Show. Your host here, Joe Cortez, and my sidekick, like always, number one guy, John Zimmel. John.
Yes, sir.
Heavyweight division. We've been talking about it lately. There's been a lot of rumble going out there about these great fighters. They're going to get it on and whatnot. And you know what? Here it is again.
Oh, my God.
Luis Ortiz. He's already out of the fight with Deontay Wilder. He tested positive for drugs.
Again. John. Every time Deontay Wilder tries to do something, it's again. This guy has gotten so much flack throughout his whole career. Said people, boxing traditionalists say that he's his unorthodox style. If you put it up against someone who's strong or someone who's good or technically this or that, that he would get beat. And he tries to appease these fans. He agrees to go to Russia just to fight Alexander Povetkin, and then he fails a drug test. It's the third time in the last 18 months.
Yeah, and this is what's wrong with boxing. You know, what's going on? These trainers got to know what the hell's going on.
No,
if they don't know what's going on, then you got to educate your fighters. I mean, this cannot continue. Eventually, we start banning these guys for life.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll stop.
Maybe.
Because maybe 1 year, 2 years is not enough for them. They figure they're going to get away with it. But one day they're going to say, you know, we changed the whole system. You test positive for drugs once, you're out of the game
maybe.
Altogether.
I mean, because you're right. I mean, look, if you look at a guy like a Luis Ortiz, who I think he's 37. I mean, this is a guy this is his last big payday probably.
Exactly.
I mean, why wouldn't he risk a 1 year suspension to cheat? You know what I mean? Like, if it was a lifetime ban, it wouldn't be worth the risk, probably.
Yeah, well, that's what the guy got to understand. Maybe somebody got to stand up and say, you know what? You guys are banned for life. You can't fight in our sport. We don't want you in our sport.
That happens. Tennis does like 2 years if you have a secondary ban or whatever it is. Which is huge in tennis too. You know what I mean? I'm saying that, but there's a lot more. There's a lot of other sports that have a lot more stringent.
Well, maybe that 1 or 2 years not enough. Maybe you should make it 5 years, mandatory 5 years.
Problem is the different commissions. Because, like, let's say Nevada, bans you for life because you tested positive twice here. Then you just go fight in New York all the time, or you just go fight in
Dallas. It got to be universal.
Dallas.
It got to be universal. It got to be something
that's the,
all on the same page. All commissions got to be
all divisions, all athletic commissions.
You know, and that's why sometimes people say why boxing is so crooked, it's so screwed up, and it's not. It's a sport that I love the best, and I don't want to talk bad about it.
I understand, but it's not perfect. Yeah,
I want to see the best, but why can't these guys do something and man up and say, you know what, I'm going to do it the right way. But it all starts with how your upbringing, the way they bring you up in the amateurs, the way they bring you up in the pros, bring up, you know, have the proper schooling. Maybe you should need some counseling at these gyms where somebody can go in there and talk to these guys and put up signs and posters. I know WBC puts up some posters in different places, but it should be mandatory that every gym has a poster in reference to the effects that the drugs will have on you.
Yeah.
Not only that you're cheating in the fight, but you're cheating yourself, your body, yourself, your health. You're going to deteriorate. You have heart conditions. And that's why all these steroids, and you find a lot of athletes, especially in wrestling, they were under steroids, and these guys go berserk. They go crazy. They pass away young because their body's not accustomed to it. Your body's not made for that.
Yeah.
What the heck is going on with these guys?
It's, well, you know, I mean, they have a small window to fight in. I mean, what, like 15 years?
Yeah.
You do anything you can to try and make as much money and as you can during that time.
Yeah, but don't they understand that they're ruining their lives? I mean, their reputation.
Like they can become accountants.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all they have.
Yeah, I know, but still, you know, there'll be an asterisk on the on a win or
no,
loss.
I couldn't agree more, yeah. Because it ruins your legacy and it ruins your body.
But,
and,
you know, they probably don't care. They think, well, I want to make a couple of $1 million
exactly,
and that's
man.
It.
And that's the bummer about it.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest problem with that, with us being able to police that, is the difference in the commissions and the difference in the different divisions not being able to be on the same page. And it makes it hard. Like, we really need to unify a little bit more on certain things like this.
John, I think that these guys are just hungry for the money. They don't care about the repercussions, you know, in their careers. They want to make a quick buck. They're not educated. Most fighters are not educated, and you find some that are. But, you know, it's their upbringing. It's how you take care of yourself and your self-esteem. Have confidence that you can beat these guys. You know, back in the days when I was fighting, man, the paychecks were not that big. And you didn't hear about these guys doing drugs. I mean, they didn't have, like, the VADA. They have VADA now, VADA.
Yeah, VADA, whatever they call it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And they do the drug testing, you know, here in the United States. And they find a lot of these athletes that are into drugs. And maybe this is what we needed a long time ago. It's been around for a number of years already, but still with that, it's not scaring enough these fighters.
No, I know. Well, that's one thing that, I mean, That's one advantage the UFC has over boxing, is because they're one unified division. They're able to, I mean, their drug testing is much better than ours. It's much more like uniform across the sport, because you can't just bounce from WBC to WBO or IBF or whatever just because, you know, you got bounced out of one of them.
Yeah, well, I think that if all the sanctioning bodies get together and all the commissions get together and have a universal database, you test it for drugs at this place, or you got knocked out in this state or this country, they got to know this overnight. You can't just pick up and leave. Okay, I got banned in Nevada. I can go to Colombia and fight next week.
I mean, we're not going to unify in every way. We're just not. That's insane. But if you can unify on certain really important things, like drug testing or certain judging things, then that would make perfect sense. And I think we're mostly unified on weight classes. Mostly. Yeah. Obviously, there's a few little, you know, but that's something that we can unify across. We can unify across drug testing as well, I think. I don't think that's out of question.
Dante Wilder has got to be going through hell because, you know, for the last three opponents, you know, they all tested positive.
Less than 2 years. You know, he just wants to fight somebody. Just give him a chance.
Yeah, before you know, he'd be fighting himself. He'd be shadow. Honestly. He'll be shadow boxing out there. You know, there's nothing out there.
Everybody else failed?
Everybody else failed. He said, you know what, I'll shadow box myself and I'll come out clean.
Him and Anthony Joshua will fight 10 times in a row because nobody else is.
He said, be in my shadow.
Bring me in
my shadow. They'll be fighting away. Dante Wilder and his shadow fighting away. There's nobody else out there. And those guys, the thing that could beat him, you know, they say, you know, maybe I can't beat him on my own skill. I got to go on some kind of enhancement drugs so I can beat this guy.
When he said, you guys should be scared of me? I'm the devil of this division. You should be scared.
Yeah, he's a devil in disguise.
I'm not saying I agree that everyone should be scared of him, but I do like that confidence. I mean, that's how I would feel if everybody that I was about to fight was cheating every single time.
Yeah. Well, you know what? If I was a heavyweight champion of the world, I'd be telling these guys, man up, let's do it the right way, the way I did. I came up clean. I did it the right way. Let's do it.
He still wanted to fight Ortiz. I mean, he said he did. I think it's kind of a show thing, but he still was like, put me in the ring with him. Put me in the ring with him.
Yeah. I think right now he can go up against anybody and do just fine, you know, but... These guys got a man up.
And now we got to watch another Stiverne fight.
Yeah, he's fighting. Yeah.
I mean, that's the craziest part.
Well, Bernard Stiverne was a heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
And
for a year, 2 years.
Yeah, and he ended up losing to
Wilder.
Dante Wilder for the championship, and now there was a mandatory clause because, you know, he had Don King.
Of course,
his manager, and Don King, of course, you know, he's a. He has all he knows all the angles, all the tricks of the game.
Oh, yeah, no, he's been doing it forever.
He knows that, you know, you're gonna fight my fighter, I want a clause on the contract that says where we lose, we get a rematch.
Exactly.
So, but Stiverne ended up getting a 775.
Yeah, well, a 675, but 675. Yeah, he just to step aside, just right. so he could fight, just so Wilder could fight Ortiz, he spent $700,000 almost just to prove what he could do.
Yeah, because Stiverne was rated number one. And he was the mandatory challenger, so they made a deal with the WBC that he steps aside and he fights Luis Ortiz.
One good thing is he was going to be on the undercard, so it's not like you're fighting. He's going to fight somebody who's cold.
Yeah, he was ready.
So he's somebody who was ready to fight someone.
Yeah,
exactly. So you know, I mean, but we've already seen this. You know what I mean? It wasn't fun the first time. It's not going to be fun this time.
Yeah,
I hope so. But you know what I mean?
You know, Stiverne is hungry and he knows that this is his last opportunity because he's getting up in age as well.
He's 25-2-1.
He got a decent knockout record.
Yeah, no. Oh, 21 out of his 25 wins? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The guy's, I mean, I got nothing but respect for Deontay Wilder, and I hope that he gets through this. And, you know, I understand that he's been just distraught about it. That's all they talk about is he's like, what more do I have to do?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, just win this fight. Joshua, just win your fight, and let's see the fight that everyone wants to see in the heavyweight division, please. You got two titans up there. Let's just see it, finally. Can we just, one's 19-0, one's 38-0, 37 knockouts. Yeah. Let's just see them go at each other and finally, I mean, that's just fun.
Exactly. Well, you know, you got this other up-and-coming fight. You got Guillermo Rigondeaux.
Oh, yeah.
He's a two-time Olympic champion with a 17-0 record and that 11 KOs. I mean, Freddie Roach, like he said before.
Yeah, he called him the probably the greatest talent I've ever seen.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not low praise. Freddie Roach knows.
You know, I used to say a fighter got 10 fights is like nobody. He's just coming out of
that's
the amateur.
The craziest
We're talking
part,
about Lomachenko. 9-1. The only guy that beat him was Salido.
Yeah.
Salido beat him.
It was his second fight.
Yeah.
And it would have been his second title in two fights.
Exactly.
That's another guy with two gold medals.
Unbelievable, you know?
I don't know.
So we talk about these young fighters. that are up and coming.
That is funny though. But he's 9-1, and what is he pound for pound on ESPN? Well, where would you put him pound for pound right now?
Lomachenko, he's about number 3 or 4.
I would probably have him 3. Yeah, I mean, some people put Canelo ahead of him, some people put Canelo behind him, but I think I put Crawford and Triple G ahead of him.
Exactly.
But
Andrew Ward was the number one guy there.
Yeah, Andre Ward was.
Man, all of a sudden, boom, he's gone, and now here we are.
Chocolatito was number one 6 months ago.
6 months ago, wow.
God, man.
But, you know, here we go, Regandol.
That's the fun thing about pound for pound.
But Regandol is 37 years old?
Yes, he's 37, and he's a rock star, man. The guy's just been, I mean, he's 17-0, but not for lack of trying. He's tried to fight anybody he could. Yeah. Nobody in his division will fight him.
He had to go up and wait.
Twice. He's going up two divisions to fight the number three pound for pound fighter of all time.
So now, if Lomachenko beats him, people say, okay, he beat the guy, but the guy's 37 years old.
And way undersized. Yeah, I don't think that puts him ahead of Crawford and Triple G to me.
No.
But if Rigondeaux wins, I probably have to put him number one for the time being.
Can you imagine a 37-year-old?
Oh, my
but
God.
Then, but then again, Floyd Mayweather was 40-something, and he was number one in the world.
Yeah,
you know?
When you look at when he was 37, Floyd, I mean, he had some really good fights.
Hey, how about George Foreman, 45, become heavyweight champion of the world?
Did you see what George Foreman just said?
What's that?
He offered to fight Steven Seagal in a pay-per-view.
Yeah, come on. That's a joke.
He did. It was on Twitter. They're come both on. Going back and forth.
Those guys are ready to go under soon.
Oh, my God. That would be so horrible. I would watch it, though. I don't think I'd pay for it, but I'd watch
it. I think that's just a lot of talk. There's no way George is going to get up there and fight anybody.
He's so old. He's the one that said it. He started it.
Yeah, he's old as the hills, man.
They both are. They're both old and fat. That fat grill and grill he has, he doesn't use it.
It's funny how this boxing game is going. But the fans out there, you know, we had a pretty good, decent year.
It was a
great year in boxing. Controversial decisions, which was a black eye for boxing.
For sure.
Not for the fighters, because the fighters, they lived up to what they...
That was a great fight. And it's a bummer that's what we remember.
Canelo about. And...
Yeah, that's the one, of course, that I'm referring
Canelo
to.
Canelo.
That was a great fight.
Yeah.
Golovkin. What were you... you were telling me earlier, WBC just made it a mandatory rematch, right?
And Baku and...
Which doesn't mean much, because either one of them could
WBC convention.
Vacate the belt, but still...
But we knew that night, it was a draw. What happens when there's a draw, the competitive fight, forget about the judges. They want to say, you know what? Let's have the rematch.
And there was
a close on the contract with Canelo.
The only one I can think of that wouldn't want to see that fight again is Oscar De La Hoya.
Well, I think you know, if they make the fight, it'll be good. I mean,
it'll be
a good paycheck. I mean, they both came to fight.
Oh my God, yes. I think in a rematch, I attribute a lot of what Canelo did to Triple G's respect for his counterpunching ability.
Yeah.
And then once he took his biggest shots, like 2-3 times, I think he just went, you know what, this guy's not going to hurt me. And then he was way more comfortable in those middle rounds. I think if he comes out the second fight knowing that he can't hurt him with a counterpunch, then he's just going to come out swinging. And I think I'd take Triple G in the second fight.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I'm glad to see that that the boxing is still up on the rise, and the pay-per-views are doing very well. I want to see more on the national TV. You see a lot of PBC fights, Golden Boy.
Oh, yeah.
And...
I was watching one Fox Sports 1 the one at the Cannery you were at.
Yeah.
That was on Fox Sports 1.
Exactly. Yeah, they're constantly putting these fights on now. The fans are trying to catch on. They don't have to be paying for the fights, but now they get to see fights on a weekly basis. You see 2 or 3 shows a week now. They're trying to pick up like it was back in the 70s and 80s. You know, the fans got cheated out of boxing because of all the pay-per-view. So
exactly.
Everybody straight away, they said, the hell with it. We'll watch.
It's coming back. I mean, look, Terrence Crawford's last fight was on ESPN. That was a good one.
Yeah, well, that's what Top Rank is doing.
Yeah.
They also signed up with ESPN. Golden Boy and
Smart.
Top Rank signed up with ESPN.
We're getting a lot more interest in boxing right now than we have in recent years.
Yeah.
I mean, the Maypac area, Mayweather-Pacquiao era was great for boxing for those two. And it made a lot of money for those two and boxing and pay-per-view.
Right.
But as far as, like, other fighters.
Right.
It, we're only focused on who those guys were and who they fought. The Mosleys and the Hattons and the people that both of them fought. And then now, with no clear-cut number one and two, it's a lot more universal across the sport. Well, it's a lot
good.
Of fun.
It's good. Like I said, Top Rank, Golden Boy, and PBC.
Three
you
biggest,
know,
yeah.
You got, they're all on there, so we're getting a lot of good fights. That's what the fans want to see. And now you got the MMA fights in a UFC.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt, you know.
It's
so
funny when people say that. Yeah. When people say UFC kind of supplanted. Like, no, it didn't.
No.
Basketball and football aren't competitive against each other.
Right.
They can be both successful sports. Just because one's doing well doesn't mean the other one's not doing well.
As long as it's run right, you know, they
exactly.
have uniformity across the board, get good judging,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Testing.
Testing with the drugs and get good officials, you know, the judges, referees. Get them all into place, get them into check, and then...
All the infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, sometimes we have to retrain these officials and train the trainers.
Yes.
So that these fighters really come out to fight and fight with, you know, with good condition. You know, conditioning is so important in boxing. Some of the fighters, they want to work so hard that sometimes they leave it all in the gym.
Oh, yeah.
And I start thinking again about the Canelo fight, Canelo with Golovkin. Canelo was fading out. His arms are dropping. You know, you got to wonder, he trains so hard. I think he left it all in the gym.
Yeah, you know what's funny is people were, you know, we even talked about it beforehand, that Triple G was going to be the one to tucker out because he's not used to going the distance,
yeah,
and Canelo
yeah.
is.
It was the other way around.
It really was. He went crazy towards the end. Canelo really was swinging wild and really trying to, but it was only for, what, the first 30 seconds of the last three rounds?
Yeah.
That was the thing. It was pretty universal that he won two of those last three. Like, just about everyone had him either 10-12 or 11-12. Or all three of them. But rewatching it was interesting to me that it just felt like he tuckered out. He'd go out there, put on a show, and then just back away the whole rest of the time. And
judges, you know, like I said, there's four criteria. And you fans out there listening, I can tell you the four criteria in boxing for scoring a fight is effective aggressiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning you have to be going forward or you can be going back, but you got to be connecting. So effective aggressive, you can't just
be swinging without connecting.
Yeah, you got to be connecting. Okay, then you got defense. That's important, you know, trying not to get hit. And, of course, the cleaner, harder blows. And then, of course, that regenerative, all overall regenerative. So I say if you go by those four criteria, some judges say, oh, I scored a run. I'll score the first minute for this guy, the second minute, the third minute. Forget about that. It's overall because the harder, cleaner punches is what dominates the round.
Yes, it's the whole round.
Yeah, and that's where you can be jabbing me, hitting me with 10 jabs, 20 jabs. Okay, good. But you know what? I hit you with one good solid blow, and I buckle your knees, and that overcomes the 20 jabs you hit me with. People got to understand that. You got staggered. You go almost went down, and you don't knock down, and instead of calling a 10-9 round, I'm going to call it a 10-8 round as a judge, you know?
No problem with 10-8s. There's not a lot of them. Like, I wish there were more. And there was one, I think the Pacquiao-De La Hoya fight had a 10-8 round. But in big fights like this, they really are, like, they do make up the difference.
Yeah.
If you win one round really, really heavily, and then the next two rounds you lose by a little bit, it should be pretty even. I mean, I don't know. I like 10-8.
Well,
I wish it was used a little more.
A 10-8's got to be a fighter that didn't go down. But yeah. he got wobbled pretty good. He got clocked really good.
If he does go down, it's 10-8 also, right?
It's 10-8 if he go down. But let's say he didn't go down.
Yeah,
you can
exactly.
still call it a 10-8.
Absolutely.
Because he got overwhelmed in that round. He got pumbled all over the ring.
A lot of fighters are afraid. Or a lot of judges don't want to do that.
Well, they got to do it. That's why we have these controversial decisions.
Exactly.
Split decisions. You got to be on the same page. If I get three judges in a room who put a video and this guy getting bounced around from corner to corner and... one judge is going to call it a 10-9. The other two will call it 10-8. Well, something's wrong with the guy who called it 10-9.
Yeah.
He didn't go down, but he
lost badly.
He got hit so many times. His knees buckled. He was holding on. Almost went down. And that judge called it 10-9. That judge should not be judging the fight.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. Yeah. I like 10-8s. I wish they used them more.
Well, they all got to
be. Especially in big fights.
I think with more seminars, more training for judges, it should be mandatory that all states have not only one or two seminars training for judges. I think they should have a seminar at least every 3 months.
Oh, yeah.
You know, have a 3-4 hours.
Why wouldn't you?
They got to, you know?
No, it's that important.
It's not like driving a car that you can take a test.
Every two years.
You know, no, you got fighters' lives in their
yes.
hands, their careers on their...
Entire...
You know, you're going to ruin their careers, and it's all because of incompetent judging.
Exactly, because you didn't have the training.
Yeah,
and
you got to get the commissions to say, you know what, we got to have more scorings... more better scoring on the officials. We have to have more seminars to make sure you're on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tana's talking about being on top of it. Here in Las Vegas, a couple of nights ago, we had a tragedy in boxing. You heard, not in boxing, in what happened in the...
at the Country Music Festival?
At the Country Music...
Route 91.
Yeah, they had a concert going on. And this guy decided to rent a room at the Mandalay Bay.
He got comped the room.
He got comped?
Yeah, he's a really
he's a high roller.
He's a multimillionaire.
Yeah, multimillionaire. And here's a guy, multimillionaire, all the money in the world, had issues. If he wasn't happy about something, you know what? Shoot yourself in the head, but don't take all these innocent lives and all these families that there's 59 deaths and 527 injured.
Yeah, the injury rate
they were
just
either wounded or they were injured with broken ankles or whatever, you know. It was 527. Trampling. It was crazy, you know. These people, there was over 22,000 fans out there watching. It's just sad. No,
yeah, there was only over 40,000 people at the festival over the whole weekend and 22,000 at that last day.
You know, I was there last night and I was able to meet this. He happened to be a Boxing 5 fan. I ran across him and he was there involved with the
shooting.
He was helping out and whatnot. Anthony Luca. And Anthony Luca, you know, he was there at the festival that
at the Route 91 Music Festival.
Yeah, and it was a shame to he got involved. I did an interview with him last night. This is how that went. Listen to this. Here in Las Vegas, the boxing capital of the world, Anthony is a big fight fan. But last night he was involved with the shooting that took place here. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences last night with the melee, the people that got shot, 58 deaths, and over 500 were sent to the hospital? Can you tell us a little bit about your experience last night?
Yeah, the first round of shots that had started were almost like teaser shots, and everyone had looked at each other, and you felt a shift of energy in the crowd of, were those gunshots? And then everyone kind of went back to doing what they were doing, and then that's when the stronger round came, and you started to see some people getting hit on the front right of the stage. Everyone was screaming, running, laying on the ground, and at that time, your mind and your body goes into survival mode. And we were in front of, my friends and I were located in front of the Coca-Cola Suites. And we went into the Coca-Cola Suites and laid on the floor, and you could hear the bullets hitting the buildings that we were in on the floor. And I told a friend of mine, we have to keep moving. So we start moving, and we go out of the front of the Coca-Cola Suites, and we hit the fence. And there's some people trying to climb the fence, and it felt like a couple hundred of us that had hit the fence at the same time, so the fence came, you know, tumbling down. And then it was like letting cattle out, people with thousands just going all over the place.
Where do you guys end up from there?
We jumped over some walls. We would run and then take cover, because the whole time you're hearing these gunshots go off in the background and you don't know where it's coming from. Or who's doing it and how many. And we're running, hiding in the landscaping, jumping walls. We ended up in a private hangar at McCarran.
Were you able to help anybody out in there?
Yes, there was a gentleman that had been shot in the leg that we carried in and laid him on the floor. And I was holding his right hand and had my left hand around him, just reminding him that he was going to be okay and keeping him awake. And then there was a paramedic that was in the group in the hangar, and a girlfriend of mine had taken her shirt off and wrapped it around his leg to control the bleeding. And we carried him and put him into the ambulance once the ambulance arrived. And when I had looked down and saw that his blood was covering all over my hands, it was extremely emotional at that time looking down, because you get reminded that there's men and women like this officer walking towards us that get taken the wrong way majority of the time, but they're putting their life on the line. The first responders, our military, our police officers and our law enforcement, I can't thank them enough, because we had a small taste of what they go through on a daily basis. And I felt honored to be a part of uniting with strangers like that. It was a beautiful moment after this kind of evil.
Yeah, now let me ask another question. You were involved in the middle of the concert. You were sitting there enjoying yourself. You think that the fans, we had 22,000 fans there last night watching this concert, Will this have an effect on you in the future here in Las Vegas for any events?
No. You can't allow someone's act of evil or the enemy trying to step towards you to put you in a place of fear or let the thought of fear take root within, because that's a very dangerous way to live your life. And this shouldn't scare anyone. This was an act of evil and terror. And you bless those that have been hurt, that lost their lives, and you continue to pray and build up your community and keep pressing forward.
Well, we want to thank you so much for your help last night in those tragic moments. Thank you for being part of a good humanitarian effort that you did last night.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you.
Incredible words from Anthony Luca, fine young man here in Las Vegas. What a hero.
Absolutely.
You know, it's so sad to see these things happening around us at this time of life. I mean, what's going on around this world? The earthquakes, the floodings, the killings, and this is just unheard of.
It's a scary time.
And we have to say to our friends out there, let's all pray together. Let's all be united. Let's change this world. We can't continue having these kind of events happening. We know that Mother Nature create some things. We can't help that, but we can stand together and help those people out. Look what's happening in Mexico. Look what's happening in Puerto Rico. What happened in Texas and Florida. And now this mass shooting here in Las Vegas is unbelievable. You know, John, we have to pray together and keep our friends and our listeners out there to pray for those families of the losses that they've had and those that were wounded during this crazy event here in Las Vegas. But we will stand forward, brother.
Absolutely. And if I could say just one thing about what happened, I found it incredibly encouraging, the amount of people that went down there to help, the amount of people that are giving blood right now, to the point that you can't give blood without an appointment. Our first responders, our police officers, our nurses, everyone who went into work who was off, everyone who went down there with supplies, everyone who's done everything, and
the doctors,
every single person who really stepped up in this town. And I'm from here. You lived here a long time. I got to say, I was so proud of the way our city responded and still is responding. And the one thing that I really hope is that we don't stop being Las Vegas. We don't stop being this, what makes this city great and beautiful and fun and crazy and wild and amazing. And obviously we can do things to make things safer, but we can't live in fear. And that wouldn't make us who we are.
Absolutely. And I was there last night again for the second two nights in a row. And I was talking to some of the tourists that were there, and they say the same thing. They feel bad what happened. And I asked them, will this affect them coming to Las Vegas? They say, absolutely not.
I'm so glad.
You know, we're going to stand forward and stand up to this fear. We're not going to be afraid to come here. We're not going to give in to these knuckleheads out there that just have no heart, you know, taking all these poor lives of these innocent bystanders who are just enjoying themselves here in Las Vegas, come to entertainment capital of the world to have this craziness occur. But I know that they will come back, and Las Vegas will be stronger than ever.
Yep, let's hope so.
Well, fans, just to wrap it up for this week's show, John Zimmel, Joe Cortez with Faber Firm. Talk to you next week.